Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so thank you for the introduction, Julie. I am a pediatric occupational therapist, and I know many of you don't know what an occupational therapist is. Don't feel bad. Most people do not. Is this too loud? Okay, we're good. Okay, perfect. So we define as adults occupation very limitedly, you know, is it our career. But for children, it's everything they need to do, and for all of us, it's everything we need to do that brings meaning to our lives and that we need to do daily. So occupations for us are eating, our leisure time, the sports that we play, reading a book, dressing ourselves. These are all things we need to do every day. And so any of those occupations that are awry can cause problems and dysfunction in our day. And for children, if they're not playing, if they're not socializing, if they're not eating, their occupations are dysfunctional. They're not able to be kids, and we all want to help them be the best kids they can be. And as occupational therapists, that's when we get involved. And we deal a lot with sensory, and everyone's kind of thinking, what's sensory? What is it? I know people, you all of you may be here a lot for feeding, because those are the most calls I get, but it's impossible to talk about eating and feeding without talking about sensory, because that's the basis of everything. So if you have a drink with you, and I think many of you came with tea or coffee, and then I also have little cups of water. If you don't have a cup of water or anything to drink, please go grab one of the Dixie cups now, because we're going to do a little exercise to become acquainted with our own sensory systems. Point over here. Oh, excuse me. Pardon me while I get used to this technology. It's a beautiful new room in here. Okay, so everyone has a little something to drink. So what I want you to do is take a sip of whatever you have, your coffee or your tea, and as you do so, think about what senses you're using during that activity. So take a sip now. And if anyone feels bold, you can call out a sense you used. This isn't a trick question. Senses, anyone? What was that? Yeah, taste for sure. We definitely use taste. And smell, sure. You made sure that I didn't poison the water if it was over there. Make sure your coffee is good. Visual, did we use our eyes to pick it up? What is it?
Color.
Yes, color is vision. Sorry, with this on one side, it's really hard for me to actually hear this. Visual, color, auditory. Anyone use their auditory system? Some people say no, some yes. We have a yes over here. You hear a little gulp. Maybe we're, you know, all of us 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, we have get used to that gulp. But for our kids, they're hearing something when they drink as well. Smell, we said. Gustatory, taste for sure. And then, hello, one second. Taste, I mean touch. So you all had to touch it. So we all know those. You learned those back in elementary school. You have five senses. What people often don't know, if you didn't go on to further training in occupational therapy, is that we also have three other senses. So our three other senses, and I'm going to go into these are very important. Proprioception, so when you went to grab your cup, did anybody spill? Be honest. No, because you knew exactly how hard to pick it up. If you've ever gone to pick up a milk jug thinking it's full and it's actually empty, you know you need proprioception to grab that. Your brain has already prepared your body to pick it up. You all had little Dixie cups that were paper. Did anybody crush it when they went to pick it up? No. So in order to do that activity, you also needed this sense of where your body was in space. So we'll go a lot into proprioception today because it's often a word most people haven't heard, but it's really important for all of us and paramount for your children. So if you were close your eyes, you could tell me where your right foot is without looking at it. You can say, is it crossed over? Is it, you know, under your chair? Because you have a positional sense of where your body is in space. That's proprioception, knowing where your joints and your hands and your feet are. Vestibular, did we use your vestibular system when you were drinking? Some nod, some, what is vestibular? When you drink, your head goes back a little bit. Your ear registers the fact that your head is no longer looking forward and in this upright position. That's vestibular. That's balance. Anyone who suffers from vertigo knows what vestibular is because when they tip their head back, they can get dizzy. So it's a really hard task to drink out of a little cup or your big coffee cup. Your head has to go back, and your body is responding to that change. None of you fell over when you went to drink. So your vestibular system is intact. So that's very important. The last sense is your interoception. That's the feeling of when it was going down. So again, we're adults, we kind of get used to that feeling of what it feels like to go down your throat and into your stomach. But for kids, every new thing that we're eating and ingesting is a new sensation. Interoception also tells you when you're full, when you feel that stretch, when kids are constipated or any of us are constipated. That fullness in those intestines is interoception. So just drinking that water, you used 8 senses, all 8 systems. So when people say, oh, let's just talk about feeding, you can't, because even drinking water, you need to understand why sensory development and your sense of self and all those pieces they're taking in the environment are important to you and your children. So, I don't know why I'm having trouble with this. There you go. Proprioception, you all have the hand up because some of them I have definitions for you for later. Proprioception, again, is just in your joints you have receptors that tell you where your body is in space and how hard, how much force you're putting on things. So when a child is pushing another child, when a child is having a bike, everything is telling their body how hard to do things. We have learned those things over time, but it's those that sense of proprioception telling you what to do. So I'm having trouble. I might have you do it because go back one part. Pardon me, thank you. I don't want to go into a physiological and anatomical discussion, get you back into science, you know, from college. But we do need to understand why sensory is important is the fact that it's how you register the world. And so things come in through all of those systems. You register where your body is, you look, you hear, and from there it goes to your brain, you process it, and then you form a response. So if someone touches you and you say, excuse me, you've just formed a response. You felt it and now you have communicated a response. So communication is one of the responses that comes out. For some of our children, especially the little ones, or if there's a communication delay, that communication might not come out. Motor, you might, when you're thirsty, you feel that in your body, that's a sense. You go and you reach out your arm and you take a drink. You've now used a motor response. For children, one of their most common responses is 3, behavior. Why? Because something feels awry or they're taking in the world, they don't necessarily know how to correct it, and they don't know how to communicate. So behavior is how they're actually responding to that sensory world around them. And the last one, which is very important, is your autonomic response. And so we're going to go a little bit into that because it's important when we talk about regulation. There we go. Maybe I just have to keep it down here. So what do we mean? People say sensory regulation. What do we mean by that? We mean that when we've taken in these senses, so when you see a lion in the distance, back in, you know, if you're on the savannah, all of a sudden, without having to do anything, without having to tell your body anything, your body goes into an automatic response. It's part of our nervous system. And it brings a lot of blood to your muscles. It increases your heart rate. It increases your respiratory rate. And all you're thinking right now is fight or flight. So that is a response to the sensory world around us. The opposite of that, the system that calms your system down, is called the parasympathetic system. When that system is activated, that's when we do everything else. All of the occupations we need to do every day, get dressed, eat, for our kids play, for us go to work, to learn, happens in this other system, the rest and digest. You're open to the world. You're able to learn. So when we talk about regulation, we're talking about parasympathetic activity activation. You're ready to take in the world. Our kids need to be ready to take in the world. That zebra who's running away is not thinking about what they're going to eat. They're thinking of getting away. So if a kid's having trouble eating, part of it is this system is in overdrive, and that's not what their body wants right now. They have no appetite when you're that zebra running away from the lion. The zebra's on the right side. They're ready. They're not worried. They're able to eat and drink. So this is the biggest takeaway you need to take away from today. Things that are unfamiliar or unpredictable are stressful, and I mean biologically stressful. To us, a surprise party is very fun. To a toddler, to a 3-year-old, to a 4-year-old, this can be a biological stressor. If anyone has planned an amazing party for their child or taken them to Disney World or seen a cousin at a party melt down, we think it's fun, but to them, it can be unfamiliar and unpredictable, thus stressful. This is my little adorable niece, Lily. Santa Claus. We think it's fun. Let's go take her. To her, it might as well be a lion in a savanna. It's some unpredictable event. Not fun for her, and her body is in that stressed sympathetic activation. So it's important to think like a child, not like us, when we go to approach some of these events from a sensory perspective. So, you see. I'm going to picture. Here's some of the favorite children in my life in what we say that just right arousal. What is just right arousal? They can rest, they can digest, they can play, they can learn. You all have kids or work with kids. You know what that looks like. When are they in that just right space that they can take in the world? They need to be able to be in the space to do all those things we need them to do as adults to get on with our day. But in order to get there, their sensory systems need to be regulated. So this is not a very unscientific diagram that I like to use. I've made them myself. That blue area, in yours it's gray, but that blue band is that just right arousal. And you know, if you have multiple kids or you teach, every kid's band is a little different. You have the kid that can stub their toe, can be hungry, and kind of get right back into that arousal really easily. You have other children who that band's very narrow, and they have to be just perfectly fed, watered, bathed, slept to be in that band. And so kids come in with a certain constitution, but we also can help them get there. But you have to think that each one's a little individual, and what's going to work for one is not going to work for another. Another principle to think about with sensory is that it's like shaking a can or a bottle of soda. It's additive over time. And we all know this because when you get caught in traffic on one day, on a Saturday, you're fine. But when you've also missed something at work or, you know, you lost something and everything adds up over a day, you have a very different tolerance of that. It's the same thing with children. When they've had a stressful day and things have added up from a sensory perspective, that one little thing can send them into a meltdown. It's not that little thing. It's that shaking, shaking, shaking over time. And for one kid, this child that has that nice wide band, they might not send them into a tailspin, but for a child who has that little thin band, it can. So, thank you, you're doing it magic. All right, so the next exercise is to think about sensory issues and sensory preferences for all of us. So what I want you to do is to put your fists on your lap, and I'm going to read out a list of things, and as I read them, if your answer is yes, just put out a finger. This is private, but I want you to kind of keep track for yourself. So if your answer is yes, just put a little finger out. First one. You don't eat a certain food because of texture. If it's yes, you put out a finger. If you get colder than others around you, put out a finger. If you don't like your feet to be touched, put out a finger. If you hate roller coasters. If you tap or shake your leg during meetings. If you get distracted when there's something in your shoe. If you fidget at the table. If you have trouble working in loud spaces. If you don't like massages. If you pace when you're nervous, you can see that I do a little bit of that. If you get queasy at the sight of blood. So, anyone have a finger up? Anyone have the complete fist? No, all of you have something. And if I went on to a list of 100 things, you would all have fingers out. That is to say, we take in the world differently and we all have sensory preferences. So why are we not melting down like our children? Go ahead. All right, my second and last, I promise, scientific diagram. So made this. So on the y-axis going up and down is percentage of how the percent of where our regulation is coming from, and the bottom is age, birth to adult. So us as fully formed adults, most of us hopefully, are over on this right side. That blue line, we are mostly internally self-regulated. If we can't do it ourselves, we know how to do it. If we have something in our shoe, we take it out. If we are cold, we bring a sweater. We know internally, either we know how to calm ourselves or we know what to do proactively to do it. And externally provided, we don't really need our parents to do that for us at this point. However, that yellow band is you as parents and teachers with your kids right now. They're in the 0 to 5 range. So you see at the red line, they're starting out when they're a baby, when they come out crying straight out of the womb, you are their external provider, almost 100%. You're giving them the ways and the means to regulate themselves. And slowly, very slowly, they stop relying on you, but that's very slow. So you can see for most of you in here who have kids, 0 to 5, 0 to 6, you're still doing a lot of those things. And you can see why there'll be a meltdown. All those things you're putting your fingers out for, you're taking care of yourself. Your kids may not know how to do that. They also may not know to tell you to do that. And that's where behavior comes from. They're reacting, but they don't know how to not react to that. Thank you. And you can do the next click. Thank you. So this is also their cognitive development. So not only are they not able to tell you and always act on what they need done for them, they're also in a cognitive stage. This is Piaget made the stages of development that's different from us. Your kids are most likely in the either green or blue. So the green is they're taking in everything from the world based on sensory. Babies are putting things in their mouth. Toddlers are still learning things using their sensory, all their senses. They're not really thinking about them as much or categorizing them. They're just feeling and experiencing the world. I'd like you to draw your attention to the blue side. Even if you have a 2 to 6 year old, during this stage, the child is egocentric and they don't reason logically. No matter how much they speak wonderfully and they speak in sentences, they don't logically respond like you or I. When we see Santa Claus at the mall, we know, oh, he's probably been, you know, vetted, and here he is, this guy in a suit, and we know all these things. Our kids don't think that way. They are not rational. When they see Mickey Mouse, they don't necessarily know it's the one on TV. When they're at the park and there's this big bobblehead, they are experiencing it from a sensory point of view. Look at this big furry head coming towards me. So you can't rationalize, whether it be eating, dressing, all of these things, the same way we do. They're taking in the world using those 8 senses and trying to make sense of it without their full brain being online like ours is. So it's easiest to look at children at the infant stage, because we've all been there. Some of you are out of it and probably relieved. They have 3 states. They have the sleepy drowsy, that's low arousal. They have that just right in the middle, and they have shooting through the moon. Those are the 3 stages. And they need to do everything you need them to do in that middle stage. When they're in that just right place, they can learn in that stage, you can feed them in that stage. Those other 2, you cannot. So what do we do for infants to calm them? Throw things out. Cuddle them. Rock, bounce, shake. You can keep going. So we do all of these things. Thank you. So we do all of these things to calm our infants, right? And what systems, we can stop here, thanks. What systems are we using? What's most used up here to calm our infants? Vestibular, right? How many people have taken their kid in a stroller or in a car to calm them? Vestibular, yep. Bounced them, rocked them. We're giving them all this motion to calm their system. The other system we're really using is the tactile or deep pressure. They're sucking on things. You're cuddling. You're really like squeezing them. That is how they've learned to calm. There's really only 1 way or 2 ways we use other senses. We shh, 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 and we sing, which will calm them, but being honest, we mostly use the other ones, right? So you can go to the next one. Thank you. So up until that 3-month mark, those are what you're using. And then all of a sudden, proprioception comes on the scene. And 3 to 6 month old can start learning how to regulate themselves a little bit. You're still in that 80 to 100% of doing it for them. But they're starting to learn how to use their arms and legs and calm themselves. They also can be resourceful. They can grab their pacifier and start to learn how to put it in their mouth. Oh. You can go back just a minute. but proprioception, I can't emphasize enough because we're going to use it a lot. It is nature's way of us finding out where our body is in space, and it's calming for everyone. Exercise, that's one of the reasons it's so calming for everybody. And so in this 3 to 6 month period, that's where it comes online. Okay, now we can go. Thank you. This is just a slide. You can use as your reference. The difference between proprioception and tactile. Proprioception, we usually think of moving against resistance, whereas tactile or deep pressure is something being done to you, more passive. Something that's tight, something that's, you know, just cuddling is a more passive. Both of these are very calming for the body. But proprioception is something kids can do for themselves and we can do for ourselves. We're moving against resistance. Thank you. All right, so then we've cuddled them, we've bounced them, we've rocked them, and then we send them to school. Or even if they're at home with you still, 3 to 4 years old, what are the main inputs they're getting at that point? Are they getting a lot of rocking at school? No. Are they getting a lot of driving or in a stroller? No. Their main inputs at school, you can go to the next one, are visual and auditory. 2 systems have not been used to calm them, or all of a sudden we're asking them to sit in circle time or sit at a meal at a restaurant with us, do all these things that are sitting, listening and watching, and we're asking them to stay calm all day, which isn't how they've learned to calm themselves. So we've not only, you know, provided this external regulation for them for 2, 3, 4 years, but then on top of that, we've now taken those away for the most part and asked them, now calm yourselves without those things. Stop using your bottle, stop using your pacifier. You know, mom's not going to carry you everywhere. Okay, now, how do I calm myself? It's a very difficult task, and we wonder why some of our kids have problems in school. So we can go to the next one. All right, so why do kids have difficulty with regulation? Why are you dealing with tantrums after school? Many different reasons. One of those is the fact, the yellow, loss of opportunities for tactile, vestibular, and proprioceptive. They've lost all those tools that have calmed their system and told their system it's time to calm and be in this relaxed state. And we rely on visual and auditory. I'm not going to go really into screens. I know you guys have been harped on screen time, and your pediatrician is saying that. The only thing I will say, I'll say it twice, one here and one in feeding, but it's visual and auditory, but it's also surprising. So what do we know that things are unpredictable? It can stress the system. So while a child might be calm on an iPad, and it's great for a long-haul trip or an airplane when you need them to be quiet, what their system is doing is like a duck underwater. They're looking at it, but their body is like duck's feet trying to keep them above. Their brain is reacting to it as this constant stimulation and surprise, and so there is a stress on the body. It is not calming to them. It might be calming to you. It might be calming to everyone on the plane, which is great, but as far as what we'll do over time, you're shaking that bottle. So that's a different world the kids live in than when we all lived in. We did not have that when we were children. We may have had TV, but it's a very different situation. So we have an increasingly sedentary lifestyle. We do, our kids do. They're not getting as much proprioception. Circadian rhythms, hormones, hunger, all of these can also affect how we react to the sensory world around us. We might have a big bandwidth on those days your kids sleep great and they eat great, but then on the days they don't, they can't take in the world the same way. Again, going back to those bands, they need to be in that perfect band to do these things. They're not in it. They're all over. They're shooting over and under. And then they don't know exactly how to calm themselves down throughout the day to get back into that place. So in order to do all the things, all the occupations that we say, they need to be in that just right arousal state. So thinking back to that infant, your child is now not an infant for the most part. Some of you may have infants still. But they still need that same band of arousal, that just right to be able to do all those things, but yet need to know how to do that. All right. So what do the kids look like who have sensory issues or who aren't regulating? They don't have to have a disorder. I'm not labeling them. I'm saying all our kids have sensory issues because they just can't necessarily do what they need to do. Well, I call them the dwarfs. Bully, clumsy, itchy, sleepy, clingy. Here's my little goddaughter. You can play. It's okay. You don't need to hear crying in the morning. We'll play for a second. But she's having a meltdown. It's not because she's a bad child. It's not because she's spoiled. It's because she's completely in meltdown mode over a day of 5 different activities, 2 different birthday parties, and she doesn't know how to calm herself down. So she looks like the bully. She's going, if we watch it, for a matter of time, we don't need to watch it all. You don't need to hear kids screaming. I'm sure you hear it. She's hitting the wall. She's biting. You know, she's doing these things that look like a bully. She's not being a bad kid. She's in overwhelm mode. We can go to the next one. Oh, you can watch her do that. You've all seen this, I'm sure. We can skip to the next. It's okay. It doesn't get any exciting. All right. I'll show you the next video. But so this is my little niece, Lily, and this is my wedding on a beach in St. Lucia. Fun for adults? Yes. Fun for a child with sensory issues? It's surprising, right? People are clapping at different times. It's hot. She's the blondest blue-eyed kid on the sun beating down on us. She's not having fun. It's sensory overload. You can see she's, behind my sister there. She's hiding in the picture. This is sensory overload, not knowing how to regulate herself. You can play this video. This is her even younger, and I just want you to see. She's happy. This is her at 15 months. And right here, she's going to see a lion. Watch this. Look at that. All right. So what happened? Was there really a lion? No. A garbage truck went by. And she's a kid. She's a kid that when she was 6 months old, we would rip foil in the other room and she would go bonkers. So her auditory system is highly sensitive. And so she might look like a shy, clingy, oh, she's so spoiled. But this is a kid who the auditory world sends her into a tailspin. So your kid may not look like, a kid who's hitting other kids or biting, but it could be the shy kid in the corner. It could be the clingy kid. These can also be signs of sensory issues that they don't know how to regulate themselves. So Lily has a small band. She's wonderful. I love her to death. She's now 7, but she overshoots all the time, and it's really hard to get her in that just right band because the sensory world's so overwhelming for her. So this is to say, these are ways they can present themselves. I want to make sure that I get to not just telling you these bad news, but give you some strategies. So we're going to go through there, but you have it. We can go to the next one. So kids can be over-responsive. They're taking in the world. They're getting upset. They're getting, clinging and reacting. They can be under-responsive. You may have a kid in your class or in your home that they actually need a little stimulation to get going. They're often more slumped, or they just are like kind of look a little bit drowsy. It's the same thing. You can overshoot that just right. You can also undershoot. You can have a kid who needs to be woken up a little bit to participate. And so at some point, we all have to figure out where our kids are and what they need to kind of get them there and then help them figure it out for themselves as they get older. Okay, so we can go to the just press it one more time. Okay, so what kind of inputs are calming? So these kids that are overwhelmed, universally, some things that we know, dimming the lighting, dull colors, regular patterns, and nature. Kids are not getting as much nature, but being out there calms the system. The fluorescent lighting can be really alerting to a system. So making sure that there's places in your house, but also throughout the day, and I've talked to the teachers here, having a space in the room where they can calm their system. Regular white noise, soft music, things that we know. Sucking. Kids who are 4 or 5 years old, you're not going to give them a bottle for sure. But we all drink from a straw. Straw is universally calming for us. I know we're trying to get rid of straws out in the world, but just in time, I'm teaching every baby to drink from a straw and then they're getting rid of them. But it's universally calming. So sending your child with a, you know, yogurt drink with a straw or having them throughout the day drink from that will just open that bottle a little bit as it's shaking up to calm their system. So you don't have to take away all that sucking input. And rocking, linear motion, swinging. A lot of schools don't have swings. Last time I checked, you guys have swings here, which is, yeah, Julie's saying yes. Very lucky a lot of schools don't. But it's not in the moment. The thing is a sensory, it's proactive. It's thinking of ways to get this throughout the day. We call it like a sensory diet in your child's day, on the weekends. If you know you're going to a stressful birthday party, stressful for them, remember, might not be stressful for us. You know, swinging, walking, doing these things that will calm the system beforehand. And the next slide, you can go to the next slide. Yep, proprioception. I'm going to go back to this one over and over because kids don't get enough, we don't get enough. It is universally what we call organizing, regulating, moving their body against resistance. This is my nephew shoveling. Chewing hard foods, think hard to eat foods, giving you that input, telling your joints in your body where you are is calming the system. Climbing, crawling, running. I've spent some time in Ireland. I've spent some time in France with different families. People are always like, oh, French kids eat. You know, oh, these kids in Europe eat. One thing they're also getting is a lot more proprioception than we're getting. I'm not to shame parents here because our system isn't built for it, but kids will walk and with their parents 2 miles to school every day. So they're getting that, and a lot of us used to do that when we were kids, or at least getting a lot of up and down and stairs. Their system is calming all day long throughout the day. We get in and out of cars and in and out of container, you know, whether it be the car seat and then, you know, the swing. These things, they're not getting as much of this hard work. What are we seeing? Sensory issues in the classroom. You guys are seeing meltdowns at home. So you can go to the next slide. Thank you. So most of my calls are for kids between sort of the 18-month, I say 36-month range, but it can even be, you know, up until 4 years old. Why? Why are these kids having the most trouble? What do we do during then? We put them into school often, so they're getting a lot more of the visual and auditory. But more importantly, so here's Lily, same little kid. When she's learning to walk at 14 months, she was a little late to walk, everything she's doing is a lot of work. They're getting proprioception, climbing upstairs when they're 6 months old. They're getting proprioception, pulling to stand. Then all of a sudden, they're good standers, they're good walkers at 18 months, 2 years, 2.5 years. And I'm getting calls that kids are standing on the table, pushing furniture, knocking over things in the house, doing dangerous things. Why? What are they seeking? Proprioception. They're seeking hard work. Your 10-month-old, your 12-month-old isn't doing that because they're getting it all day long. They are, that stairwell might as well be, you know, Mount Everest for my niece. But your 2- and 3-year-old and 4-year-olds are not getting that all day long. The calls usually temper off around 4 or 5. Often the organized sports start at that point. So maybe each day they're going to dance, they're going to soccer. So at least they're getting one infusion throughout the day of that hard work. But it's hard to figure out what to do for your 2.5-year-old to get their system worked hard enough. So finding ways to build it into your day. If you live in Rio Vista, thinking about, is there a day or two a week you can walk them? They can walk. It takes you longer, and it's hard to get to work, I know. But even if you have a flight of stairs, finding a reason to go up the have your child walk up and down the stairs before they go to school. These things, they just need this hard work throughout their day, and they're not getting it. We're not getting it. I mean, I don't think all of us would say we're probably at a little bit of a deficit. So that's one thing. Another thing to do, routines and previewing transitions. So going back to things that are unexpected are stressful. Things that are surprising, things that are unfamiliar are stressful. The more things become routine, the better it is from a child's perspective. So when they know what to expect, they're less likely to be surprised by things. So when you know you're going to a 4th of July celebration for your older kids, your 3 and 4-year-olds, if you know that they're in that small band, previewing that over and over, whether watch a video of fireworks, talking about it, reading stories, telling stories about it. So they're previewing that sensory experience. If you're going to Disney World, I know you're so excited about it. It's right here. It's amazing. But sometimes previewing some of those rides, talking about, telling a story. Well, we're going to get in line. It's going to be a little loud because there's, you know, we walk through a cave, but it's okay because it's just this. And then we walk onto the onto the roller coaster and we're going to go up and down. Kids need to be prepared for these sensory experiences or it sends them over the moon. Routines that help eat it, you know, teachers at school know, you know, every day they wash their hands before they come to the table. They start to be a routine that gets them ready, prepared to eat. At home, we're busy, we're stressed, we're coming in the door, get it on the table. The kids don't have that time to prepare their systems. So by putting routines in place, like first we, you know, take off our shoes, we wash our hands, maybe we blow some bubbles or drink out of a straw, something that calms our system. I know this is ideal and it's not realistic all the time, but finding something that signals to your child this is what's happening and this is what happens every day will help you out because they'll start to get in the mode of doing it. So drinking through a straw, hats and strollers in busy environments. So if you have a kid who's very visually overstimulated, having a hat, having a stroller in those kind of environments will help cut a little bit of that stimulation out and allow them to be in a place where everything is not coming at them. Again, you have a kid that has that nice wide band. They can run around, they can look at all these things, but you have to think about what child you have and what they need and what they can handle and they can't handle. You know, you can talk to an OT if you think that your child is outside of those bounds or you haven't figured out the profile of your child. Why are they melting down? I don't know. Sometimes auditory seems to a tactile. That's where you could get an OT involved and talk to them to kind of understand a little bit better. But why you're all here probably, feeding. I get my most calls about feeding. Why? Why is it difficult for a child? From a sensory perspective, so take off your adult cognitive thinker hat. What is on that plate? What is it? Chicken parm. Oh, you have your adult hat on. Colors. What else is on that plate? Strings. Partial strings. Something greasy, something red, something this. You know, oh, you're thinking, Italy, oh, wonderful. All my time, so it's probably going to taste a little bit like pizza. Your child is not thinking that. Well, you got to put your hat on like a sensory thinker. You're looking at you're using just your senses. Oh, I touch it, it's oily. I touch it, you can leave it here, that's okay. So, you can go to the next one, it's okay. So, from a sensory perspective, first, they have to be regulated getting there because eating is in that band of rest and digest. So they have to be regulated coming to the table. How many times are your kids regulated coming to the table? Honestly, probably 50% of the time, maybe less, right? Because you're disrupting them playing with Legos. You have to come eat. Now they're here. They're already stressed. They're not in that band. Next, it's the most difficult sensory experience your children need to do. By far, there's nothing else in their day that uses all eight senses, and they have to do it multiple times a day. And every day, you're throwing something on the plate that looks like that chicken parm. To us, delicious. To them, sensory overload. It's a carnival on a plate, and they're not sure what each thing is. Remember, as cognitive thinkers, you see a little piece of spaghetti, you think spaghetti. A child sees a little part of a yellow thing, they might not be able to think of the whole. They're just like, what is that? So it's just overwhelming. And then on top of that, you add motor learning. They're learning to chew. They're learning that each thing not only has a taste and has a feeling, now I have to know what to do with it with my tongue and my teeth. So it is overwhelming, and it is not a surprise that we have problems with it. We don't teach our kids to eat. We can go to the next one. Why do they all eat snacks? Packaged is predictable. It's not because you're bad parents. It's because chicken nuggets are not chicken parm. Every single time they come out looking like dinosaurs. Every time you take a Trix, you know, banana out, it looks the same. It feels the same. It's not surprising. Same child, you give them a banana. It's delicious. It's sweet. But every banana is different. Every time you cook a chicken nugget at home, it's different. Every time Purdue does, you know, sends one out, it looks the same. They are masters at quality control. So your kid is eating snacks, not always, but often, and these, you know, packaged foods because they're predictable. They're not stressful. They're easy. They're easy on the sensory system. So we need to think about how to make things, food, more predictable for them. So eating is learned. Most people think it's instinctual, and a lot of OTs think it's instinctual. It's not. The first 3 months of life, it is. So when you put anything in a baby's mouth, given a full-term baby, they're going to suck on it. That is a reflux. After that three-month period, that reflux goes away. Everything after that is learned. It's learned from around them. It's learned from the situations they have. Oh, I had that little feeling. I cried. Mom put a bottle in my mouth or nursed me. Ah, that feels better. They start to pair that. Same thing over time. Kids don't just learn to chew. They learn through trial and error. They put things in their mouth. They learn where to put things. I doubt most of you sat down and said, oh, put the food over here, move it with your tongue, and chew it. Probably not. But eating is learned. So where do they learn these skills from? They don't. Many of them don't. We think they will because we all learned. But it's like learning English. Some of you might be native speakers. You just learned it. Would you be able to teach English? Maybe not, because you don't know why you say what you do, right? But you just do it. We know we eat, but we don't know how to teach eating. And as a country, as a place, we don't teach eating. Places like France where people say, oh, French kids eat. They have a national curriculum around eating. They eat every day, all the kids eat together, and they learn how to eat. So, by when you're sitting with a child, what do they want to do? They want to eat what's on your plate, because they're learning from you how to eat. And from a sensory perspective, what's on their plate is not what's on your plate. Your plate looks like that chicken parm. Their plate looks like all pieces of chicken and a couple pieces of tomato. And you say, why are you eating on my plate? You have the same thing. Mm-mm. From a sensory perspective, not the same thing. So ways to help learn, if you can, and it's not always possible, serving family style, where, you know, it starts as one, and then you put it on the kid's plate and cut it up. So everyone's having the same thing, and it's all from a sensory perspective coming from the same place. Kids often need to try things, from research perspective, 15, 20 times. And try does not mean it's on their plate. It means they have to touch their tongue 15 to 20 times, not to like it, but to even just get used to it. So a lot of our kids aren't even putting that in their mouth 15 to 20 times. So that brings us to mess before manners. They need to explore with all those senses what food is going to feel like in their hands often before they put it in their mouth. So as early as 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, kids that are exploring with more foods, getting dirty, feeling what a spaghetti noodle does with their hands is more likely to want to put it in their mouth. So by putting it on their plate, even if they don't want to eat it at the time, one thing you can do is celebrate trying. Celebrate licking. Celebrate, oh, let's just put it to our mouth and then have a place on your table. I call it the learning plate, where you can try it and you can put it there. You don't have to eat it. You have no pressure to actually swallow it, because as soon as they think they have to swallow everything that goes in your mouth, guess who's not trying anything? Your kids. It'll become a battle. So we're all just trying it. That piece of broccoli? Okay. Let's not fight about it today. You know, oh, you licked it? Awesome. Let's put it on the plate. Things that get them used to it over time, so it's not a scary food anymore. Celebrating trying. And part of that, the mess before manners, is spitting is part of that process. If you get mad at your child every time they spit a food out, they're not going to put food in. They need to know they can get it out if they don't like it right away. It's just, if you think of an 8-month-old baby, they're pushing a lot out of their mouth, right? Your 4-year-old, still, there's so many foods they have not tried. Just like if you were dropped in Africa right now or Asia, there are foods you might want to spit out if you tried. But you would try them knowing you'd be able to spit them out. So the kids need to get familiar with them, and they need to be given permission to try and not be okay right away till the 20th time they try it. Because it's scary. So praising the trying and praising another child. If you have another child who likes to try, praising them for trying, not for eating. Oh, you licked the salmon. This is my little goddaughter, Elise, eating salmon sashimi. It's her favorite food now. This is 3 years old. She's just putting it in her mouth. She might hate it, but awesome. You tried it. Oh, what does it feel like? Oh, it's wiggly. Oh, you know, just being excited that they try it. Now when she's 6, it's one of her favorite foods. So it's really important that they learn to explore and know that it's okay from you guys to explore those foods without the pressure to eat. Eating is hard work. I don't know if anyone picked up the candy. It's a little early for candy, but you can do it on your way out if you'd like. When you actually pay attention to what you do when you're chewing and eating, it's really complicated. What you need to do, what your tongue does, is it takes a piece of food, moves it to our teeth, and then we chew it, sometimes move it to the other side, chew it more, and then swallow. Kids who have been eating purees and liquids, they're just swallowing straight through your tongue. You don't have to do anything with that. And so kids are smart, just like us. We don't want to go on the treadmill. They do what's easy. So a lot of those snacks not only are predictable, they're also easy. They melt in your mouth. So what I say, if your child's 2 years old and they're subsisting mostly on a liquid and or puree diet and then some snacks, they may not be chewing. And that's a time when you want to get a feeding therapist involved. It can be a sensory perspective. It can be something sensory going on. But it can also be they haven't learned to chew. You can press it. There's a video. This is my best friend's child, Sophie. She's falling asleep eating. It is tiring. We don't think of it as tiring.
No,
we use it to wake up.
It's the cutest thing I've ever seen.
But you've all seen, it's hard to chew. It's hard to chew hard foods. So, what are the hardest foods to chew? Meat. Fruits and vegetables. What are kids not eating? Meats, fruits, and vegetables. Kids don't know what to do with them sometimes. And they start to learn early on, 18 months old, I just don't know, I spit it out. It hasn't gotten soft enough to swallow. It's not like a goldfish cracker. It's bumpy, it's icky, I don't like to swallow it. They need to learn, and sometimes they need to see from you what to do with it. Are you using your fingers? Probably not. So your little piece of meat on the fork and their fingers, they don't know what to do with it. So from a sensory perspective, you also sometimes need to show what you've put on their plate, how to do it. What do I do with this strip of cheese? Oh, I put it over here on these side teeth. I don't just put it in the middle. When you just swallow something on a fork, they have no idea what's going on in your mouth. How would they? Kids who are learning to chew, chew with their mouth open. If you're 2-year-old or you're 8, well, I'd say some 2-year-olds really have it down, but an 18-month-old, if your 18-month-old is keeping their mouth closed while they chew, they're not being polite. They're probably sucking a lot of what they're eating. They haven't learned chewing. As you learn, you're really opening your mouth. Kids should open their mouth. You can't tell them to close their mouth at that point because they're learning, and it's a big rotary motion, and it's hard work. Kids will often chew snacks and drinks rather than doing this hard work. I have an article here for you that you can take with you. I wrote for the blog Scary Mommy about sitting and how important it is. And no, it's not always realistic, and a lot of us don't sit while we eat. However, here are my things, and you can read the article at another point. But people are worried about choking, so they give their kids solids later often. I hear parents, I'm nervous, they're gagging, you know, they're 13 months or 14 months. Those kids need to be trying new textured foods. And what's more concerning to me than them trying those foods is them running around with foods. It is dangerous to be running around as you're learning. We know how to do it. We know how to walk and chew gum, most of us. Your kids don't. They need to learn how to eat. And when you're learning, you need to be well supported. You need to be sitting. You need to be concentrating on what to do and how to do it within your mouth. The other reason, though, is from a behavioral perspective. So I see this a lot with my 18 months, my 2-year-old, is that if you're given the choice as a 2-year-old, walk around and play while carrying your favorite snack or sitting at that god-awful high chair and eating something that mom's going to give me or dad's going to give me that I don't like, which one are you going to choose? The walking around with the fun snacks. Bring the snacks to the table so that the chair isn't always about these new horrible foods. It's about we sit to eat. We sit to eat. You don't know what's going to be there. It might be that trick cereal that you love, and that might be there too, but we sit because then the chair is about this is what we do to eat. It's not about a torture thing. And the choice, the other thing is drinks. Given a choice of drinking a milkshake all day and carrying around milk or having to sit, a kid's going to choose carrying around a milkshake all day. Even at 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, kids like to graze. We like to graze. It's easy, it's fast, it's fun. But kids are learning to eat, and they need to explore new foods. And the only way to explore new foods is sort of when you're held captive with them. Kids like to play. If what's on their plate is the only thing they have to do right now, they'll play with that. But given the opportunity to play with something else, their Legos, they'll play with those instead. So eating is about exploration, and they need that time. Sometimes with this age group, 2 to 4-year-olds, they often become, they don't like the new foods anyway, and the mixed textures can be really overwhelming. So sometimes separate is best. Instead of presenting the whole plate of chicken parm, the chicken, a little spaghetti, and the cheese, even a cheese stick not melted, can be, you have more success with that than a mound of chicken parm. Sometimes separate is best just because they just need to be able to see and understand what they're eating. And sometimes it's just it's just a carnival on the plate, and they don't understand what's going on. So putting things segregated either for school or on your plate when you're, you know, that one on the left is something I use for feeding therapy sometimes. I just throw a bunch of food groups. It has all three food groups, four food groups, but it looks like a face. It's something fun and friendly, and they can pick at what they want, but they can start to realize what each thing is. One of my biggest suggestions, especially in that 18 months to about 4 years old, is they need to eat frequently. Like every 2.5-3 hours, they're burning, you know, a lot of calories, even though they are a lot more sedentary. But a snack isn't goldfish crackers. They need kind of a small meal 2.5 to 3 times a day. That doesn't mean you have to go cook chicken parm and stir fry for those meals. I like to think about it as protein, starch, fruit, or vegetable. So on that plate, I had a little piece of pita, a part of a meatball, and a piece of watermelon. That's a meal. That's a toddler meal. It's getting a little bit of everything, and they're getting a little fullness. They're getting a little fat. They're getting a little protein. Yeah, I can see that one on the left. Thank you. You're great navigating this. That one on the left is a toddler meal. They can't even take in a whole thing of chicken parm. Some of your kids might at 3 years old. Some of our kids eat like birds. So that means that every, like 3-5 times a day, they need to eat like birds. They just can't handle that much in their stomach. Some of your kids might be more sensitive to stretch than other kids. So just like your babies, some of them could have 2 ounces and some could have 9. Some kids are more sensitive to that feeling of fullness. So they can't get in all the calories they need 3 times a day because they don't like that. Their interoception system, they don't like that stretch in their stomach. So by eating 5 times a day, they're getting the same amount of calories, but in a more moderated way. Also, it reduces a lot of the frustration you might have because you're like, oh, if he doesn't eat now, he's not going to eat. Well, if you know they're going to eat in 2.5 hours, you can rest assured, okay, they only had their watermelon right now, but in the next meal, I'm giving them some more protein and some more of this, they might eat it then. So by eating multiple times a day, you feel less pressured often. So modeling is important. This is in one of the another school in the area. Peer pressure is awesome when it comes to feeding. If your kid has a best friend in the room, talk to that parent. What are you sending? If you can send some of the same things, some of those challenge food, a different fruit, they might eat it when their best friend eats it. They might ask you for it again because Rosie has it. I want what Rosie has. So that's a great time to try new foods when other kids are there. And if you are around other kids, you can also praise the other. Oh, look, you're eating broccoli. Then your child says, I want to eat broccoli. Not all the time. But they love being like their friends, and they love when people, you know, they love praise. They love attention from you. They also don't love it when you're praising someone else for something. So showing them, this is my godson, Isaac. That part about what to do. You think they know what to do with food. They don't. So helping them, sometimes you need to sit with them during a quiet time when you're both in that regulated state, not after work and you're all frenetic, but maybe on a Saturday, and show them, what do I do with cheese? Where do I put it? And you don't have to explicitly do it or say it. You just do it. And they say, oh, mom's putting it here. That's where I put it. You know, the spoon, I don't know how to use a spoon. Oh, that's what mom's doing. And it becomes more fun. That's what dad's doing. So they need that sitting, you know, face to face. Let's do it together. And it's fun. Or if they don't want to eat it, that's fine. We're just going to play with this. Let's touch it. What does it feel like with the foods without that pressure? Because they need to learn to eat. All right, the battle is real. That's true. I know you guys, it's frustrating. You have to do it multiple times a day. And feeding is about control. There are very few things that kids can control in this unpredictable life. One of them, they don't have to speak if they don't want to. There is selective mutism where they don't want to speak. They don't have to. They don't have to eat. You can't make them. I mean, you can give them a G-tube if you have to, but that's an area of control, and they don't have to poop. Constipation is real because that's an area of control. So there's some ways, you know, putting the things on the plate and trying to detach from whether they eat it all is one way to reduce the battle. And if you know they're doing it 5 times a day, you might be a little better with that. If it's the one time a day they're getting their protein, you need to get it in them. So to diffuse it, having those frequent meals. We say you control what goes on the plate. They control how much. They control how they get it in their body. So those things are on their control. iPads, distractions. As I told you, the second time I bring it up. It is true that a child eating in front of an iPad or a TV will get more volume. Why? They're distracted. You can get whatever you want in their mouth. If that is what you need to do to get some volume, and your kid's on, you know, losing weight and they need to do it, I understand. Because they will eat more when they are distracted. However, the things about that, one, they will not learn about the food. They don't know what that food is. They just know to open their mouth. So they're much less likely to try new foods or to remember it the next day when you give it to them again because they're just distracted. So they're not learning the properties of the food. You're not gaining an independent feeder over time. So in the long game, it's harder. It's a struggle. The second piece of it is if the way your mealtime goes is they fight, they don't want what they want, I put on the iPad, then they eat. You have just rewarded the non-eating. Because you've basically said, okay, once you get to the point where you're so in hysterics and you can't eat this food, I'll put on the iPad. You have taught that child that that's how they get the iPad. If you are going to put distraction on because you want your child to eat more calories, I'm not judging you, but put it on from the beginning. Don't make them fight for it or give it to them regardless of whether they eat. When we finish the meal, we get to watch 10 minutes of blah, blah, blah. But don't let them be in control of, I fight, I cry, I refuse the food. Now the iPad comes out. It's magic. They're in control. So those are some things to think about. What are you rewarding? Are you rewarding eating? Are you rewarding not eating? My favorite thing is reward trying. They tried everything on their plate. We're celebrating. Let's go watch as a family. Let's watch 10 minutes on the iPad. So think about what parts you're rewarding in that and celebrate trying in new foods. I think that might be it. That's a lot. Whew. All right. Sorry, talk fast. I could do 8 hours of both of these topics, so I was trying to give you a lot of information in a short time. If you have specific questions or clarifications, I'm happy to try to answer them. And I'm also here, I'm not rushing off, so if you have an individual question you want to ask me after, I respect your time. So I want to make sure people can leave if they need to. Thank you.